Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. Special guest today, founding father of the NBA Outlet, Parth Garadia. What's up, fellas?
What's up, Nick? I'm glad to be on with your original co-host, Parth. You know, long time no speak, but it's good to have you on, man.
Founding father. I appreciate that. I would say, though, Harris is one of the is the original founding father of the OTG pod. Maybe the outlet, maybe it's you and I, Nick, but got to give Harris a shout out.
For sure. Harris was on last week for episode 100. Check that out if you haven't done that yet. Also, shout out to Parth, big part of what OTG was doing in the beginning. So a lot of love for him, but a lot of great topics to talk about today. First on the list, we're going to talk about LeBron getting 30,000 points, youngest to do that. What are your thoughts on that and LeBron as a player, his accomplishments and everything?
I mean, it was a little corny, the Instagram post to the younger self. I don't know if I'm a fan of these things. You know, I know Kobe talked to his younger self in his, like, Dear Basketball thing a little bit. Wade did it in the past when he was at the Bulls. You know, like, you're going to have to learn adversity and stuff like that. It's a little corny, but at the same time, it's, like, just something NBA players do. But congratulating himself is a little bit corny. But, you know, 30,000, youngest player ever to do it. Unfortunately, it came as in another loss for the Cavaliers. And as Wade said in the Instagram post after, in the dark time, this was a light. So, you know, a lot, besides the drama, you know, LeBron James continues to add on to his resume of why he's, you know, a top three greatest of all time player in this league.
Yeah, I also thought the Instagram post was a little corny. One of my favorite hip-hop lyrics is "Real G's move in silence like lasagna" from Lil Wayne. I don't know what song it was. It was back when,
like, I know the line. That's a classic.
Yeah, but these NBA players do not move in silence at all. Like, they are very – a lot of them are very showy, and I get why you want to up your marketability that way. Different type of endorsements, whether you endorse something through Instagram, through a post, or a national TV kind of ad or spot. So I don't blame them all at all for kind of being showy, being a little corny, trying to be inspirational. But, yeah, the 30,000 is incredible. He's the youngest to ever do it. I think he'll continue to be the youngest to ever do it. I don't think KD will get there just because he's missed time. He's basically missed a full season, and he also went to college for a year. So he's kind of two seasons behind in that aspect. So I think LeBron will stay as the youngest to do it. And it's an incredible accomplishment, man. Shout out to him. When you think of LeBron, you think of someone that's more like a Magic Johnson, a pass first kind of get your teammates involved kind of guy. But my man can score the ball.
Yeah, that's what LeBron said in his like after the game. You know, it was crazy that he did that. And, you know, going to the league, he was like a pass first guy, and he just ended up getting the scoring. What would you say is your favorite LeBron moment, you know, so far in his career?
All right, well, two stick out in mind. The first one, which is funny to me, it's the game-winning three against the Orlando Magic in the the first or second round. That was, like, one of the first times I, like, actually watched LeBron in a playoff game. And, you know, he hit that buzzer beater. And then the second would be probably the most memorable moment in LeBron's career, probably one of the biggest plays of his career, is the block on Iggy. I just think that's, you know, kind of career-defining, that block. I mean, that's what LeBron James is known for.
So I feel like I'm a little bit older than you, Corey, so I remember a little bit more of earlier LeBron.
I just hated LeBron. It's not that. I just wasn't a fan.
All right, so I'm not going to age myself right now. I'll say we're the same age. But I've watched a lot of LeBron, especially in middle school, high school, when I was really impressionable at that time. I really watched a lot of NBA basketball as a pure fan. So I remember a lot of LeBron moments. The first one that really sticks out to me was, I believe he had like 25 of 27 against that monstrous Detroit team with Chauncey, Rip Hamilton, Sheed, Ben Wallace, Tayshaun, where he basically got them to the finals. I think that was in 2007, I believe. Mm-hmm. That moment sticks out. I don't remember the game winner against the Magic as well. I saw it happen live. Me and my dad were watching, but it doesn't really stick out as like a major moment in his career to me. I would say the decision is another big moment for me. I was a huge fan of big Dwayne Wade guy. Not so much anymore because he's flashes and not flash. I guess love is fickle. But
that was good.
The decision, of course, his face at Game 6 of 2012 with the Miami red alternate jersey. He still had the headband, still had like the thick. It wasn't a full beard, but it was like a goatee kind of thing going on. Just his face and his demeanor that entire game in Boston, where he basically ended the Celtics' big three. That was a big moment for me. The of course him winning in the finals. The I believe it was against OKC 2012, where he misses a layup, falls down, has cramps, and then the shot clock's running down. And I believe he shoots a three. It was probably over Thabo Sefolosha or KD, but he shoots a three from the top of the key, and he hobbles back on defense. Makes the three, hobbles back on defense, and they call a timeout. So that's another big moment. Him dunking on Jason Terry, big moment.
Can't forget that.
The Wade to Mario Chalmers to Norris Cole up to LeBron, and just bangs on Jason Terry off the alley-oop in Boston is another big moment. And, of course, me not – I'm not a Cleveland fan or really a LeBron fan, but the block on Iguodala is probably his defining moment of his career, because it happened in Cleveland, got them their first championship after his coming back story. I think that will be his – no, I don't want to say one shining moment because that's like a college thing, but his one moment that will stick out above the rest of a ton of moments that will forever be remembered.
Yeah, honestly, that block, you could see that being pretty much his highlight that leads off his Hall of Fame reel. But I'm agreeing. I think LeBron and that LeBron Iggy block, and then Parth, like you said, he scored 25 straight against the Pistons in that game. So, like, being able to do that against a Detroit Pistons team at that time that was so good defensively was so impressive, and it kind of just, like, sucked you into that LeBron hype. Like, when he did that, it was just like, all right, you know, we know this guy's going to be destroying everybody. But moving on from there, shout out to LeBron. Congratulations. Quick reminder, you can listen to NBA on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com. But for some juicy drama, Jason Kidd was fired earlier this week. It's kind of been a known thing by Bucks fans, NBA fans. You know, we thought it was going to happen earlier this month, and it did happen. Kidd was underachieving, didn't have good relationships with players, staff, front office members, and he just always had an excuse that the team was young. So what are your thoughts on Jason Kidd being fired?
Well, Nick, I know this really hurts you and pains you because I know you're a huge Jason Kidd lover. I mean, it is funny how I know players didn't like him. I know that Sean Kilpatrick tweeted, LOL, thank God, after he was fired. and he was only there for a short time, which is already funny that, you know, his relationship is already so poor with Jason Kidd. Obviously, we know Antetokounmpo wasn't so happy about the firing. He told Jason Kidd he was going to reach out to ownership and try and make them change their minds. Obviously, that didn't happen. But like you said, just in your little summary, Nick, the Bucks underachieved. You know, this is a Bucks team that at least you and me predicted to be a top five seed in the East, to be really dominating. They even added Eric Bledsoe, and they haven't gotten better. If anything, they've gotten worse. There's a lot of good players on this team that just haven't really gelled. Obviously, Jabari Parker is on his way back. But the team should be a lot higher up in the East than the eighth to or the seventh to ninth seed range that they're at currently.
So I thought it was a little bit surprising. I don't watch as much NBA basketball as I used to. I've shifted a little bit more towards college, which is surprising, knowing me. But it kind of took me aback a little bit. I'm kind of surprised they didn't wait until Jabari came back to see what the team looks like. I'm surprised they made it mid-season. Versus at the end of the season after everything shook out. So I don't know, man. I'm not surprised that a relationship, him having poor relationships led to this. Because even when he was in Brooklyn, like the way he left Brooklyn was kind of just weird.
It was bad. Yeah, it was. I mean, it left a sour taste in a lot of Nets fans, you know, eyes because of what he did for the franchise as a player, but what he did as a coach, you know, trying to get that power hungry thing, it wasn't a good look.
And, like, those relationships matter, especially in a business as close-knit as the basketball industry is, especially at the pro level. Everyone knows everyone. Yep. Everyone has a relationship with everyone for the most part. It's very rare that you don't know someone at a high-level executive or high-level coach or at that level. They all know each other. So, you know, one sour relationship could lead to multiple different relationships that eventually will sour. And I think the way he left Brooklyn – not only just for fans, but just executives and people around the league, like that stuff's not cool. And then when you don't produce as a coach to your expectations, like you have that grace period is really short. So in that aspect, I'm not surprised, but I don't know. If I was in charge, I would have at least let him run the course through the season and then figure out what to do. I'm not a big fan of mid-season coaching changes.
I think one of the main reasons they wanted to do it now is they felt like the team wasn't getting better and they wanted to kind of capitalize on this season. They're thinking maybe some changes can change that, because not only are they underachieving, but there's been a lot of talk about bad rotations, lack of adjustments. Obviously, Giannis started the season being so dominant and he's cooled down. Obviously, teams are adjusting and the Bucks haven't really adjusted. And like Corey mentioned, they got Eric Bledsoe and it really didn't make much of a difference. They've kind of stayed at the same level. So really interesting stuff. And Parth, you made a great point with the Sal relationship. You know, now he has two places, because in the Bucks organization, it wasn't just, you know, the players. It was the front office people as well. So I think it could be tough for him to find a job at some point. I think Doc Rivers said he would take him on his staff. But Kidd comes off to me as a really egotistical guy when it comes to coaching.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, too, because I know, at least from, you know, just being on Twitter, that there's a lot of people, like the Grizzlies obviously need a head coach. And I know, like, the Grizzly fan base is begging not to hire Jason Kidd. Like, a lot of people don't even want Jason Kidd as a head coach, whether – you know, it's because of the ego, like you mentioned, which is clear and evident if you watch him on the sidelines or even give a press conference. I agree that it's going to be tough for him to find a job. And also the Bucks fired all of his assistant coaches who were like really close with him. So the Bucks want nothing to do with Jason Kidd.
Yeah, so definitely interesting stuff. He went 139 and 152 with the Bucks. Obviously, it started off better than it ended, because, you know, when he came to the Bucks, they kind of surprised everybody and made the playoffs. And then after that, and they were a really good defensive team. And ever since then, they haven't hit that defensive level. So I think that was a big reason why they let him go. What do you think is going to happen for the Bucks the rest of the year? Are they going to get better, stay the same, or get a little worse?
I'm going to say they're going to get better, but it has nothing to do with coaching. I think that's simply them getting Jabari Parker back. I know that also Jason Kidd kind of didn't use Brogdon at times. I remember seeing a clip where it was like the second or almost the end of the second quarter, and Brogdon hadn't even logged a minute. And Antetokounmpo was like, "Why aren't you in yet?" And Brogdon's like, "I got no idea." And just like things like that, just don't make sense to logical like basketball minds. I think rotations might be a little bit better, but I think Jabari Parker is going to have the biggest impact to maybe push this team a little bit farther ahead.
Yeah, you know what? Now that I think about it a little bit more, this season is critical because the Cavs look so, I don't know, like mediocre. Like they don't look
vulnerable.
They don't look like the Cavs of old, and the East looks like it could be had. I don't think Boston is really that good. What are they, number one in the East right now?
Yep. I think 4-game right. Losing streak right now at the moment.
Yeah, I don't think Boston is that good. Offensively, Brad Stevens is such a good coach, but I don't think he has given him the offensive pieces just yet. It hurts with Gordon Hayward not being there, but
yep.
Be top three for them to really win. I don't know if they could keep that up. It's tough. Playing defense is like a want-to kind of thing, and you have to have energy for it, and that's just tough to sustain over 82 games without just having an off night where you could just shoot the lights out. And Boston doesn't really do that. Toronto looks good, but, I mean, the East is open, so I would hope that the Bucks would want to chase Eastern Conference Championship crown this season, because it looks like it could be had by a couple of different teams. Of course, I would still pick Cleveland as the favorite because LeBron, but like you said, they're vulnerable. So hopefully with Parker coming back, it changes things. And like Corey said, they make a nice little run.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, the Cavs are vulnerable. We're going to talk about them next. Obviously, there's been drama in Cleveland. Feels like every other week. 3-7 in the last 10. They had an emotional team meeting this week, calling out Kevin Love for leaving Saturday's game, faking his illness, saying he's missing practice and he doesn't really want to be there. Obviously, there's Isaiah Thomas, quote-unquote, was the one leading that meeting against Kevin Love. Also, Isaiah Thomas has mentioned the team doesn't practice or try that hard like they did in Boston. They're only 3.5 games ahead of the 8 seed. So what are your thoughts on all the drama in Cleveland right now?
I kind of find it really – I don't know. Is it ironic or funny that a guy who's played 8 games all year is calling out a guy who's been on the team for 3 years or 4 years, whatever it is now, with Kevin Love? Isaiah Thomas shouldn't call anyone out at this point in time. I don't know where he kind of gets off. I might be a little bit aggressive right now, but it bothered me when I found out that he was the one who initiated it, because he really doesn't have a place to call out anybody. And he also made the mention the guys aren't practicing, which I feel like is a shot at Wade. Last year in Chicago, guys were like, Wade doesn't practice every day. And, you know, Kobe didn't practice every day either, his near the end of his career. The older guys just can't do it, especially Wade, who has bad knees. I'm sure it's very hard to practice every single day or give 100% every day. It's just how it is at the age of 36 now. Obviously, I feel like anytime a LeBron James team struggles, there is drama. It doesn't matter if he's in Miami, the first stint with Cleveland, or now. There just seems to always be a cloud that follows. And, you know, I guess you could say LeBron's kind of a drama queen, because it seems to always come around LeBron. Kevin Love isn't the issue. If I was Kevin Love, I'd actually probably demand a trade at this point. It looks like Kyrie Irving got out like just in time, as if he knew the shitstorm was coming, and he was like, I just got to jump ship. But the Cavs are in a bad place, man.
It's crazy to see the narrative turn so quick about Isaiah Thomas. Like, just in the playoffs last year, oh, he's giving it everything he has. He's fighting through the tragedy of losing his sister.
Well, no. He did. No. I don't want to take anything away from Isaiah Thomas. I don't want that to be the message I was given. Because he clearly, everything he did for Boston was over the top, and he went above and beyond what a player needs to do, especially after his sister passed. But, you know, in a short stint with Cleveland where you just started playing, I just don't think a guy like him who just got on the court should be calling out other guys on faking an illness.
No, I understand what you're saying, and I'm not coming at you or anything for trying to change the narrative, but just like the overall narrative in general, not just what you're saying, but it's changed about him. Like, you're not the only person that feels like, dude, why is this guy the one calling people out? He's barely been here. But what I'm saying is, last year Isaiah Thomas was looked upon as the savior for Boston. He's the best thing Boston has going. He's given Boston everything. And now this year it's, what's he doing at Cleveland? He's a ball stopper. He doesn't really work in the flow of an offense, especially with offensive talent like Cleveland has. And then the whole Pierce and IT video tribute retirement jersey thing. Like, it's just been a bad end to 2017 and start to 2018 for Isaiah Thomas in terms of just like public perception of him.
Honestly, it's been really rough. And Brad Stevens probably helped him out so much defensively with his scheme that I have a good feeling that Isaiah Thomas is going to lose a lot of money this summer, because I don't see anybody willing to give him the max like they might have given him a summer ago, just because he's such a liability defensively. Yeah, he can still put up buckets, but if you don't have a Brad Stevens type of defensive system behind him, you're just going to get abused. And it's not like he's putting up efficient numbers. And I'm not throwing shade. We never know if he'll actually be the same coming back from a hip injury, which is pretty serious. So like Corey said, I don't like that. And also, I've seen this on Twitter. Like, why are people giving Kevin Love a hard time when Derrick Rose doesn't even know if he wants to play basketball? If you're Love, are you demanding a trade?
I mean, I don't know if I demand a trade. I don't think Kevin Love really has a problem. But, you know, I just think there's a point in time where, like, if your team's ragging on you and you're always the scapegoat. I mean, we saw Chris Bosh have to deal with it all 4 years in Miami. You know, whenever Miami struggled, it was, oh, Chris Bosh, you're not doing enough. And Chris Bosh even told Kevin Love, it's probably what's going to happen to you because you're the third wheel in Cleveland. And even after Kyrie has left and Kevin Love has kind of become the number two guy, he still gets treated as like the scapegoat. And I just think Kevin Love, who's, you know, you can kind of see the writing on the wall that Cleveland's window title chasing is over, especially with this roster. I think it wouldn't be dumb for Kevin Love to say, get out of here, you know, get what you can for me, but I'm done.
If I was Kevin Love, I don't know. I don't think I would ask for a trade, because you're still the favorite in the East to make the finals, at least in my opinion. But man, the Warriors are going to sweep you guys if you like. if the roster stays the same. I know there are reports of trying to trade for George Hill, which would help the backcourt defensively. Does Iman Shumpert even play anymore?
He does, but I think he just came back and he's not very good.
He can't shoot. He's never gotten over the first knee injury in New York.
Pretty much.
Okay, so, I mean, he would – George Hill would be a defensive upgrade, but George Hill is also hurt all the time. So, I mean, it's not putting you over the top to where you could contend with the Warriors unless you make another trade. if you do indeed get George Hill. But if I was Kevin Love, I don't think I'd ask for a trade. I'd probably stick it out at least this season, and then based on what LeBron does next season, make your move then.
Yeah, I think it's tough. Go ahead, Corey.
No, go ahead, Nick. I was just going to say, you know, if Kevin Love sticks it out, then he might as well just stay, because then he'll be the face of the franchise when LeBron leaves, right? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he'd want to win, but if LeBron leaves and Kevin Love becomes the number one option on this roster, just something to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, you're the Cavs and LeBron leaves, you probably try to move Love and flip him for assets. But I think if the Cavs are going to do anything this year, they need to make a blockbuster type move. It won't be one move. It has to be like a roster changing move where they're adding a lot more athleticism, defensive talent, and just guys that fit with LeBron that aren't over the age of 32. You know, they need some younger dudes, or if not, it's just going to be a sweep. And like we mentioned, there's no guarantee they're going to the finals. So if you had to put a percentage on, I know I asked this a lot on the pod, but I feel like every week it gets a little bit, the Cavs get a little bit more vulnerable. What would be your percentage on the Cavs making the finals this year?
I actually think it's probably right around 50% now, right? It's got to be 50-50, because I know everyone alludes to there's a switch. There's clearly no switch. Can we put that to rest, that LeBron's team don't really have a switch? Because I can't see this roster getting into the playoffs and going, all right, guys, playoff time. Let's just all play superstar basketball. I just can't see that being a possible route for this team. So I'm going to say 50%, because there's, you know, the Raptors have looked really good. The Celtics have stumbled offensively, but defensively they're still the best team, I think. And then, you know, there's still a couple teams, like Miami's playing really well. I don't think, you know, I think it's 50%.
You know, I think it's higher than that, but I think seeding actually really matters in the East this year, because you do not want to be the second or third seed in the East this year. You want to be the first, because after the top three teams, there's a clear drop-off. I think Miami's number four. I wouldn't, like, I don't know, Miami doesn't really have any all-stars. I wouldn't be afraid to play Miami in the playoffs. Like, they always play hard, but I would rather want Miami than possibly a Washington or Toronto, definitely Toronto or Boston. I think Washington is fifth right now.
Yeah.
And they're all over the place. So I would avoid Boston and Toronto, if Cleveland gets the one seed, obviously Boston will be two or three, Toronto will be two or three. I don't think you want to go through those two teams. Like, you wouldn't want to play Toronto in the second round and Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think that makes your road 10 times tougher, especially this year for Cleveland.
Exactly. I agree with that. And I think getting that first seed is going to be very difficult, because I believe they're six games back of the first seed right now. And Boston just seems more interested in winning regular season games than Cleveland does. So I don't know what the Cavs are going to do. Obviously, we'll be talking about that a lot. But moving on to our last segment, if you guys didn't catch episode 100, we did an all-star draft for the starters. But today, Parth is going to fill in for Jay as Steph Curry. Corey's going to take over as LeBron, as he was last week, and we're going to finish this draft. So LeBron's team was Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, Joel Embiid. Curry's team was James Harden, DeMar DeRozan, Anthony Davis, and DeMarcus Cousins. So without further ado, do you want to make your first pick?
So I think I get the first pick now that it's the reserves, because LeBron got the first pick in the starters draft. Is that correct?
Correct. Well, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If not, we're making it a lot of time.
It is now.
Anyone from either conference, right?
Yep.
Oh, that's tough. There are a lot of good names. I'm happy Dave finally made the All-Star team again. He's very deserving. I'm surprised Chris Paul did make it. I know he missed a lot of games, but I'm still surprised he didn't make it.
Yeah, especially
Paul George didn't make it either.
Especially with the Rockets record, I think that was interesting, because usually, you know, you play that hard, you have the second best record in the league, you're getting two All-Stars.
Yeah, and, you know, the Wizards got two at Bradley Beal and John Wall, and they're kind of falling off the rails right now. So, but I would probably go with, you know, I take it AD and I take it Cousins. There are a lot of good guards, but they're less good bigs. So I would go with someone like you know what? I'll keep it in the Warriors family. I'll go with Draymond.
All right, you know, I like it. Obviously, you're staying safe. You're staying with what you know. I'm gonna get someone who I know hates you guys. So Russell Westbrook.
Yes.
And I'm going to make him and KD play again with each other again, just because last year when they threw that oop to each other, like the Twitter and the universe almost ended, which was really enjoyable.
You know what? I think if this was the actual draft, the NBA would not allow KD and Russell to be on the same team. I think it's so much more exciting when they're on opposite teams. But I don't know. Like, what would you do for a Russ fast break where KD tries to block his dunk? Like, that would be the moment of the All-Star game.
Especially if it gets really aggressive, too. And, like, KD fouls him hard and it's the All-Star game, it'll be like, oh, my God. And then they just start getting up, and then you know what'll happen next. Fake NBA fights.
I know, right? There's been a lot of NBA fights this season, surprisingly. I don't know what's going on. 2018's
fight season.
Fights between players, fights between refs and players. Like, this has been – people are PMSing hardcore this season.
Anarchy. For sure. Anarchy.
So you took Westbrook. I'll go with – I'll stay big, and I'll go with – should I take Porzingis or Cat? We'll go with we'll go with Big Cat for me.
Ooh, that was – I kind of wanted Cat, but I'm going to go, surprisingly, with LaMarcus Aldridge because wow. I want to talk to him about the Spurs because I have interest in possibly going to San Antonio this offseason. So I'm just going to talk to them and see what's going on.
Okay, I see you, Corey. Oh, my bad. See you, LeBron.
Thank you. You know, 30K club against the Spurs, just interested in the culture.
All right, so I have four bigs now. I think my bigs are great. I have Kat, Draymond, Cousins, and Anthony Davis. While your only bigs are Embiid and LaMarcus, I guess you can count Kevin Durant as a big since he is 7 foot.
We don't care about bigs in this league, man. Come on.
I know, but I'm still a believer in skilled bigs beats little skilled. So I would go. I need a guard. Left. I have to go with Klay since he's a teammate.
Keeping the Warriors culture together.
I like it. I might as well trade you Durant at this point, right?
PVKD.
Yeah. So my next pick is obviously my issue is bigs. And I want Kevin Love to feel safe. So I'm gonna pick Kevin Love because I just wanted to know that I still somewhat love him because he does little things for my team.
Okay, LeBron, trying to keep your team happy.
You know, I gotta play peacemaker. You know, him and Isaiah Thomas are beefing.
Three ball handlers. Let's see. Maybe four ball handlers left. I'm going to take another. How many do I have? I have eight players, so there's four more players left. I'll go with the unicorn, Kristaps.
Not a good pick.
Not a good pick?
No, I said good pick.
Oh, okay.
He was upset for 1 second. He was like, shit. He's like, damn, I thought that was good.
Dude, I mean, you guys are closer to New York than I am. Have you heard something about Kristaps that I don't know?
we haven't picked a lot of people from the East yet. We're killing these Western reserves. This is just because this is Corey called me, so I'm gonna pick Victor Oladipo only because Vic the Quick is a goat, and I want to see him and Westbrook play together again.
Oladipo's having a fantastic year.
Incredible, yeah.
So much about the NBA anymore is just fit and your role, and his fit with Westbrook wasn't great, and his fit with the Pacers and his new role as kind of the go-to guy. He's been playing very, very well. Shout out to him. I'm happy he made the All-Star team. He deserved it.
Yeah, for sure. Honestly, and it came at, like, not out of nowhere, but, like, we didn't expect Oladipo to make this type of jump. We thought his numbers pick up in Indiana, but to get to this level so quick is definitely a big jump for him.
All right, so my team, we need some guards. I need a ball handler. I'll go with John Wall because I feel like he's perfect for an All-Star type of game. Just will look for people constantly and will push the pace. So I'll go with John Wall, even though he's kind of having a down season.
Yeah, he doesn't look healthy.
Man, oh, man. Okay. Yeah, no, he has not looked as good as he definitely has in the recent past. I think it's a part of the Wizards' struggles, you know, for them saying that they're contenders and the best team in the league. They really should have put some more some thought into how they play. Okay, my next pick. Oh, man. I'm on the fence between. Yeah, I'm going to take Jimmy Butler.
Solid pick
right
there.
Right, Jimmy Butler's there? Yeah, Jimmy Butler's still there. I'm taking JB. I have a lot of defenders on my team because LeBron said that they're going to actually play hard. Or, I mean, I said that we're going to play hard in this All-Star game, that we want people to actually watch the game and enjoy it and show them some good competitive nature. So I'm just going to go with another defender just to, you know, lock up your Warrior lineup.
I'm going to take Damian Lillard.
I was hoping he was going to slip one more pick.
All right. So everyone in the West is taken. I think all we have left is Lowry, Beal, and Horford.
Correct. And I can already see who's just like dangling that no one wants. I'm not going to say his name because I know he's going to get picked last.
I know who you're talking about too.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Bradley Beal. I want another shooter on my team. You know, flea gunna. There we go. So I think I know who you're going to take.
I'm taking Lowry.
Yeah, that was predictable. So now you got Lowry and DeRozan, and of course, I'm going to have to get the guy who's going to set screens, picks. Moving picks. He's going to hit some beautiful, nice 17-foot jumpers. Al Horford, who I love, but he's just not all-star flashy. But then again, we're going to win. So
throw some layups Horford's in there for you.
Horford's the kind of guy I want when we're going to win because he can play and make stuff. So my team is now complete.
All right, so this is the full lineup we got for both teams. LeBron's got Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kyrie Irving, KD, Embiid, Westbrook, LaMarcus Aldridge, Kevin Love, Victor Oladipo, Jimmy Butler, Bradley Beal, Al Horford. Steph Curry's got James Harden, DeMar DeRozan, Anthony Davis, Cousins, Green, Karl Anthony Towns, Klay Thompson, Kristaps Porzingis, John Wall, Damian Lillard, Kyle Lowry.
I like my squad. I do like my squad. I thought it would be very difficult to beat LeBron because LeBron, KD, and Giannis – that's just an incredible trio of wings, and wings kind of win in this league. It's not the point guard. It's not the big. It is the wing. But I feel like to kind of balance that out, Anthony Davis could take one of them. Draymond Green can take one of them. And then kind of that third one is going to be tough. But we got two guys.
You definitely got height. I went for a little bit of length. A lot with my guys. I like length. I like speed. So I got a good mixture of that. But I got to admit, you know, you got a lot of big-time guys. Obviously, you have the three-headed dragon before Kevin Durant came. And then you got Anthony Davis and Marcus Cousins. A lot of chemistry. That would be a pretty fun starting five. I can't really run that, but.
This would be an awesome lineup to see them throw out there if you ran with Steph Curry's team. Draymond Green, Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins, Karl Anthony Towns, and Kristaps Porzingis.
Yeah.
Just all fives that can really do everything, or fours, whatever you want to call them. But that'd be pretty cool.
You know, have you guys heard why they're not televising or making the draft public?
Don't want to hurt people's feelings.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's so bogus.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not really surprised. They at least should have done the all-star starters be drafted. Maybe not the reserves and let them do it behind the doors, but the starters are still the starters. Like, who's going to be mad? Oh, my God, you're the 10th starter. Like, bro, you're still starting the all-star game. So,
Who would have been the last starter picked?
Who was the last starter? It was DeMar DeRozan.
Would have been picked last, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's definitely, no offense to DeMar, who's having a great season, but he just doesn't have the same flash or hype the other teams. Some of it's his game. Some of it's playing in Toronto.
You know what? I was actually in Toronto and Mississauga a couple weekends ago for the G League Showcase. It was awesome. The guys up, like the staff up there that ran it was great. But, man, like it's being in the States versus being in Canada, just like the coverage you get of the Raptors is the difference is unreal. Like everything there is Raptors, Raptors, Raptors. Like their sports center leads with either a Maple Leafs highlight or a Raptors highlight. And here you might not even get a Raptors highlight if you watch sports center the entire time. So it just, like, I know there's only one team in Canada, and I was in that same kind of area where they play. But, man, like, the coverage that, like, the U.S. fans do not get of Toronto, it's kind of sad.
Yeah, it's crazy, too. And their fan base is strong, so that helps them come playoff time. But anybody stick out to you when you're at the G League's showcase?
Emil Jefferson was really good. He has good numbers, just a really active big. I'm surprised he's not. I know he was one of the last cuts for the Timberwolves, I believe. And then they signed him to the Iowa Wolves. But he was really good. It's, I don't know what the hell happened to Cliff Alexander. I think he was like the number one player coming out of high school.
Kansas,
and then,
right? He played at Kansas, right? Yeah.
He didn't click exactly to start. And then I think he had some sort of off the court NCAA eligibility issue and then dropped in the draft. And now it's just been like when I went to Chicago for the D-League Elite Mini in May too. That was a couple days before the actual NBA combine. And he was there too. I was surprised to see him. I'm like, man, why? I thought this guy would be in the NBA. Like, he's a super, super skilled, but he's just like a big physical presence. So I'm surprised he's not in the league.
Yeah, he played a little bit with the Nets Summer League team, I think, way back when he came out. And, like, he showed some flashes. And I think he had some decent moments in, like, the G League. And then, like you said, it's just kind of been inconsistency. His hands sometimes, like, at least when I watched him play, were kind of questionable. He would drop a lot of passes. Like you said, though, he has that physical presence.
Yeah, he's probably not the most skilled dude. But, you know, just – I mean, it's crazy just to think that he was the number one player in high school at one point. And that wasn't too long ago. And he's now in the G League, which is not a bad spot, but I just thought he would be in the NBA at this point. But who knows, man? It's tough. You got to be the best of the best, the cream of the crop, to play in the NBA.
Yeah, for sure. Before we get out of here, Parth, what would you say, like, obviously you follow the G League a good amount, or, you know, you pay attention to it. Do you say the fandom of it is growing in terms of actual people paying attention to the games and the players on the team a little bit more than they were before?
You know what? It definitely is growing. Last weekend, I actually wasn't able to come on the 100th episode because I was in Greensboro for a Swarm game. And their arena's amazing. And I mean, it's a smaller arena, but it gives you like a real kind of college feel to it because it's in Greensboro. Yep. And so the night I went, it was like Boy Scout night. And so the arena was packed. There were a ton of Boy Scouts there, just a lot of different fans. I had basically like a courtside seat, which was awesome. The Swarm aren't the best. They're not the best team in the G League, but they're continuing to get better. They played 905, the Raptors team, and they had Lorenzo Brown, who was great. He's one of their two-way guys. Miller, I don't know his first name. It might be Malcolm Miller. He was another good player. He's another two-way dude for 905. Kennedy Meeks, who played at UNC, was there. Marcus Page, who was another UNC guard, plays for Greensboro. Cat Barber plays for Greensboro, who was an NC State guard. Lorenzo Brown, who I mentioned, was an NC State guard. So a lot of players that played in the Carolina area, like the Greensboro, Chapel Hill, Durham, Raleigh, like that entire area, were there. So the fans were great. At the game I went to, it was pretty electric, and it was a close game, so that helped. But I think the G League in general, it's just these teams have to get their own kind of venues and their own, I don't know, like a venue. I guess venue is the best word.
Their own organization
and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they need to like attack it like they were their own team almost, because like somebody, like you said, doing small promotions for any type of like minor league or G League type of stuff is going to help. Having other kind of things, that gimmicky stuff at the arena, is going to help build up the fan base. But I think with the NBA growing so big, the G League's definitely going to see some revenue come from that, because people are just going to be more interested in the next guys that can come up, because we're seeing a lot more G League guys have success in the league. So shout out to my guy Spencer Dinwiddie, who was killing it, and he was a G League alum. So
I think the tough part for the G League, though, is I won't name the team's name, but I know this team, they'll be getting their own venue and all that kind of stuff soon. But when I went to one of their games, they play in a college arena. And so with that, they have to schedule around, like they have to work with the scheduling of the college games. So unfortunately, they don't have any home games on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, because those are all taken for the men's team or the women's team in college. So they play on weeknights, and that obviously hurts. Yeah. It's more of a family atmosphere. That's what pro sports is. It's not that crazy college, Cameron crazies, drunk college student kind of atmosphere. But it still hurts because you can't always get kids out to watch a G League game on a school night. maybe if it's an NBA game, a G League game on a school night, like it's that's a hard sell to parents.
Exactly.
So I think once the G League becomes more of like their own thing, where all these teams have their own facility, don't have to share with other colleges or just other people, like a public setting, I think it's going to grow. And then you also have to kind of compete with college. Well, I don't think you'll necessarily be able to compete 100% because some of the college facilities at these top D1 schools are better than pro facilities just because they have boosters, old white dudes that have a crazy amount of money that just pour into the athletic departments. And pro teams will never really have that. Like, business money is a lot more than athlete money. Like, let's not get that twisted. So,
yeah, definitely. So it'll be something cool.
It has a lot of room for improvement. But it's great to where it was last, I don't know, 5 years ago to where it is now. Huge strides.
Exactly. And I mean, sure, we're going to see some guys get some 10-day contracts coming up soon. So listen to some of the names of Parth drop. We'll definitely have them on the outlet again. As always, Parth, thank you for taking the time to hop on. Corey, thank you. And thank you to all the listeners. You can catch the NBA outlet on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and otgbasketball.com.